Hey everybody, this is Tom Dotan inviting you to another episode of The Information's 411, our weekly podcast where we talk about how the tech industry is being upended by COVID-19. That's not normally our topic, but that's the only thing that we can talk about per state and federal regulations. So today I've got Alex Heath on the line, who has been paying attention to all of the earnings for the social media companies. So Snap, Twitter, and Facebook all reported earnings in the past couple of days. And they all reported fairly similar but divergent stories. And we're going to get to that individually because it all says a lot about the state of these companies, the state of advertising, and also the difference that these three companies all have. So Alex, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me. Not that I have anywhere else to go.
Yeah, well, you're here. That's the best place to be.
Nowhere I'd rather be.
Yeah. So let's just go chronologically in it, because I think starting at Snap and going through to Facebook and Twitter, you saw very different stories, I thought. So Snap was the first to report, like I said, and they ended up telling a very positive story. Like, revenue was up, growth was way up, and you know, as Snap and the other companies sort of indicated what the real impacts of COVID were, it seems like Snap's was more muted than the rest. I mean, listening in on the call, what was your take generally on like the Snap Q1 story?
I mean, I think everyone was surprised that Snap performed as well as it did in Q1, which I think, you know, as you wrote, speaks to the direct response business they've built in the ads business. And you know, they warned of more pain to come, which is kind of at the through line of all these companies this week, is that, you know, and we all kind of knew this going in, but it was interesting to see color from all of them, is that, you know, we saw some slowdown, you know, really in March, and, you know, Q2 is just kind of up in the air. It's not going to be pretty. Although what was surprising about Snap, and I think what led to, you know, their shares kind of exploding after the earnings report, is that they're actually still seeing yearly revenue growth in April, which is kind of phenomenal, yeah. Because even Facebook was saying that the growth they're seeing is flat. And Twitter obviously is seeing a double digit, you know, which we can talk about, double digit, you know, percentage drop in yearly revenue growth this month. So yeah, I mean, Snap actually seems to be the one faring the best right now, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And so that was like something that I was fascinated by leading up into earnings, because as you know, having reported on the company for a bunch of years, they've been in this transition from the beginning days of their revenue story from going after big brands doing kind of influential campaigns or like, what do you call those things? Like brand influencing campaigns. They want you to feel positively about a certain brand, or, you know, if it's like an upcoming movie, they want you to be aware of, you know, whatever summer release that is paying for ad spots on Snap. That was like the initial pitch. And then over time, through the former head of strategy, Imran Khan, through till today, they've been making this kind of painful, but what they've always said was necessary transition into direct response advertising, which, why don't you explain to people like what DR advertising really is?
I mean, it's essentially an advertising, you know, an advertisement that is getting you to do a specific thing versus like, oh, we want to remind you that Coca-Cola exists. It's more like download this app, you know, right, buy the movie ticket, et cetera. And that's really where, Snap's saying that over half of its ads business is now direct response, which is a pretty dramatic switch they've made, and is really in contrast to how slow Twitter has been to build up its direct response business. And that's really why Twitter felt so much pain, is they're so reliant on these bigger brand events-driven ads.
Right, yeah. And so the thing about Snap with DR that I find just so incredible for them is that they didn't go into this business expecting, you know, DR to be a very recession-proof industry, especially during a once-in-a-generation pandemic. It was just the thing that made the most sense for them because of, you know, the type of clientele or customer that they have on the app or user they have. And yet they've managed to find themselves in this like incredibly fortuitous situation where the advertising, the type of people that advertise on the app, which is like app install, so mobile gaming companies and other kind of digitally oriented services, and not say travel and automotive and like financial services, just didn't, like, those other huge categories never were interested in SNAP. And it just so happens that as the pandemic hit, those were the big categories that were hit the most. I mean, it's just like, it seems to me in some part, like, just incredible luck on SNAP's part. I mean, what do you think?
Yes, it's definitely a lot of luck. I think, you know, you got to give them credit for, so, you know, building up the direct response business as quickly as they did.
Sure, totally.
Especially in contrast to Twitter. But yeah, it's definitely like, I mean, this whole situation we're in, like, as a global economy, is just, no one could have predicted how, you know, what would happen. And no one, you know, probably had this pandemic in their model. So certainly they're very lucky. And also they benefit from the fact that their prices for ads are far lower.
Right.
They are, you know, than Facebook's and Google's. And so they're an increasingly attractive place to do, like, cheap, you know, relatively cheap, you know, targeted ads towards, you know, a demographic that is definitely desired. You know, I think they get a lot of knocks for only reaching young people, but, you know, it's increasingly, you know, that age group is aging up. And so it's a lot of millennials and stuff. And they seem to be in a very good spot. Whether that is justified in the stock price is a whole other thing, but, revenue growth is definitely going to slow in Q2, like, for everyone.
Right.
But it seems they may actually still eke out positive yearly revenue growth, which is kind of amazing in a pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. So if Snap is the best of times, I think it's safe to say that Twitter is the worst of times for social media companies. I mean, like, break down for me why Twitter is in such a worse position than any of the other companies.
Twitter is almost entirely reliant on ads like, you know, say, NBA-related ads, or, you know, the Olympics, for example, was mentioned, I think, almost 20 times on their last earnings call. They are, you know, these big tentpole events. They do a lot of, like, you know, bespoke, you know, ad deals around. And obviously all that stuff is either canceled or postponed for the foreseeable future. So I think, you know, Q2 was going to be a big one for them, especially with, like, sports, and none of that is happening. So, and at the same time, they scaled back their video efforts. So potentially in another reality, if they'd invested more in video, they could be siphoning away some, you know, TV ad dollars if more video consumption was happening on Twitter, but I don't really see that happening. So they really don't have an answer to this. And they, you know, said that, you know, Q2 so far is looking like March, you know, the end of Q1, which was, I think, like negative 27%, you know, growth year over year.
You just don't see with these kinds of companies. It's just not, I mean, that's terrible for any company, but social media companies are all driven by quarterly growth.
Yeah. But, you know, we should note that, like, at the same time, they had their best user growth quarter since they started reporting daily users, like, 4 years ago. So all of these companies are actually seeing, like, record user growth, even if ad revenue is drying up. So I guess if you want to have, you know, a bull thesis, is that when the advertising market comes back, Twitter's going to have more people to show ads to, you know, if they stick around, which we don't know.
Right.
But that's their framing. That's not going to help in the next few quarters. And the backdrop of all this for Twitter is that they have this activist investor, Elliot, that is, you know, already trying to push them to make huge changes and potentially get rid of Jack Dorsey or make him a full-time CEO, because he's also the CEO of Square. And if Twitter continues to perform poorly, you know, you could potentially see some interesting stuff happen there.
Yeah. What about that, by the way? I'm embarrassing to say I did not pay attention to Twitter's earnings. How much did they address the Elliot mess? Ooh, that's a good one.
Elliot, oh, not mess.
Not at all.
Not at all. Yeah. And, you know, Elliot's stipulations were that, you know, Twitter meet some aggressive user growth numbers, and looks like they'll definitely do that. I wonder if there are maybe some revenue targets there that they need to meet as well, and we'll probably find that out. But, you know, if Twitter is looking at, you know, a quarter or multiple quarters of negative revenue growth, I don't know how that doesn't lead to more, you know, changes at the upper levels of the company.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, this is really just speculation here, but because of the unprecedented thing that we're all going through right now, there's a fair case for any company to make that the projections that you were giving us or the goals that we had to meet in a pre-coronavirus world just really don't apply right now. So
I'm sure
Twitter is a ways away from having to make this argument, or you should hope they are. But when it comes down to it, it seems like a reasonable case to make to the board, like, hey, you can't exactly hold us to the requirements of a company that wasn't dealing with the collapse of our very specific type of ad business.
Right. And that's definitely a fair point. Although you would also, you know, you could also argue that Twitter set itself up for this because they've been so slow to build up the direct response business. And
fair.
They were actually talking about it before all this. Jack Dorsey was talking about how they were so focused on finally getting their mobile app and, you know, install business back on track. They haven't done it. So, you know, Twitter's been so slow on all this stuff. And so this just really, I think, accelerated all the problems they already had.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely something to watch over the next couple of quarters. All right. So let's finish off with Facebook. Obviously the biggest of all of these, and the one who's, you know, actually seems like they're, what happens to Facebook has like much larger kind of macroeconomic implications for the country.
Yeah.
So theirs was fair to say, like, I don't know, a mixed bag. I mean, how would you rate, you know, what Facebook put out?
I would say a mixed bag, but investors definitely liked it because they said that growth in April so far has been flat instead of negative. And
revenue growth.
Revenue growth, correct. And they managed to pull off the best user growth numbers for the core Facebook app in, I think, 9 years, the best sequential growth. So the Facebook app has been growing at like a, you know, single digit percentage quarterly, basically since the company went public, and they eked out like really solid user growth this quarter because obviously more people are turning to social media when they can't see each other face to face. So I think, you know, people think Facebook has a lot of just long-term potential to, you know, once all this subsides, just take up even more of the digital ad market. The same thing for Google, because, you know, marketers will go to the more effective platforms. We saw this in 08 and 09 with the collapse of print ads. And I imagine we'll see a similar type of collapse in TV or potentially some other mediums. So that's only good news for Facebook and Google. So, yeah, it was definitely a mixed bag, but I think that, you know, that fact that they said that growth has stabilized in April, you know, from the steep decline they saw in March, shows that potentially they might not even hit negative, you know, yearly revenue growth this year, which
right.
would also be an amazing feat.
So did they give a sense, though, because Facebook is a company that is exposed to these compromised markets like travel and financial mm-hmm. services. I mean, did they give a sense that although those very publicly fell back, that things like DR basically filled in some of the gaps to a point that it wasn't, you know, things weren't as dire?
Yeah, I mean, they have 8 million advertisers, so the mix there is just very wide. And so, yeah, they saw auto and travel pull back significantly, as you would expect, but they saw gaming, e-commerce really explode. And they reach so many people in so many different categories, and they have so many different ad categories and ways of showing ads that they really set themselves up well to be able to kind of shift the plates around if certain areas pull back. And, you know, in the next couple of quarters, we could see even more sectors pull back. But for right now, it seems like they've managed to balance that mix pretty well.
Yeah. And looking forward, I mean, what were their projections for Q2? Did they say that it sounds
none.
Like none? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the common refrain is that every company is withdrawing its guidance, and they were no different. You know, they definitely did give a little juice to the stock by saying what we're seeing in April is that, you know, growth is flat, which, you know, if things don't get worse, means that potentially they could get back up into positive territory very soon, but just remains to be seen.
Yeah, especially, go ahead.
I mean,
sorry.
No, I was just saying, like, with they have so much untapped stuff too for investors, like WhatsApp and which I talked about in a story the other week. And like, there's so many services they have that, for example, their non-advertising revenue, which is still like less than 1%, which is all the hardware, the portals, the Oculuses, all that. That grew like 80% year over year. And
still minimal in the overall pie, right?
Still minimal, but it's showing that like, the how they make money is shifting a little bit. And they're very focused on commerce, and, you know, they have no problem spending money even in this pullback. You know, Mark Zuckerberg talked about how margins are going to come down, but that's not going to always be the case. It's going to be very temporary. And they just did, like, they just invested over $5 billion in an Indian, you know, tech company, Jiro, to kind of kickstart e-commerce on WhatsApp there in India. So they're even if, you know, while all this is happening, they're spending billions of dollars.
Yeah, their money real good. and did you get any sense from them, from small medium businesses make up a significant portion important portion of their revenue? Obviously, they've been pretty devastated by all the closures. Did they say at all what they were seeing as those businesses sort of struggled to get back on their feet?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, small businesses make up the vast majority of their advertiser base. And that's why you see them like doing all these grants. They're doing like these $100 million grants to small businesses for free, you know, Facebook ad credit and all that. They said the obvious, which is like all these small businesses are pulling back. But they're trying to I've seen Facebook introduce more non-ad monetization opportunities in the last like few months than I think ever. They've started allowing people to do like paid live streams, you know, where you have to pay before you can even watch a live video, and tipping. They're doing a lot of tipping stuff in certain areas of the app. So they're really trying to give people a lot of different ways to make money. They're letting business pages, raise money, like GoFundMe essentially directly, which is a new thing. So they're trying to, you know, do as much as they can. But, you know, right now it's just kind of uncertain.
Last thing I want to ask about here, Heath, is so it sounds like Zuckerberg began the call basically by saying we need to respect shelter in place orders and we're not expecting the economy to open up in any serious way for quite some time. I mean, I guess it ended up being an interesting contrast to Elon Musk basically reading like the Braveheart speech during his earnings call in defiance of, federal and local orders. I mean, what was he doing? Why even go there for Zuck?
Are you talking about Elon or Zuck?
Elon's a whole other case. I mean, he's just, I don't know, trying to get more Twitter followers or who the fuck knows. but like, what is Zuck thinking here?
Well, Mark has a unique view because he funds a lot of scientific research and through his philanthropy arm. So he's talking to medical experts a lot. And he was actually one of the first, you know, big business CEOs to make, you know, employees go work from home and kind of put more restrictions in place. He basically said on the earnings call that he foresees the fallout of all this being much worse than people anticipate, especially if we have people, you know, start coming back to normal life sooner rather than later. So he's kind of like Bill Gates in that they're both, you know, they have huge, connections with the scientific community and medical community. And they're both saying, look, we need to be taking this more seriously. And I don't know what Elon's relationship to the community is, but I don't think he has much of one. So, beyond like maybe he watches Alex Jones, I don't know. It seems like it, but
whatever gets him more engagement. It's not even consistent with the dude. We can have a whole other podcast about the psychology of Elon, except that's what he'd want us to do. And I'm hesitant to give him any more.
Well, you can have Amir on for that.
Yeah. Amir thinks more about it than most people, except people on Twitter. All right, Heath, good work as always. Thanks for running us down. And yeah, we'll definitely have, we'll do a Q2 version of this in a couple of months, because I feel like that's going to tell the real story of what we've been experiencing over the past couple of weeks. So I look forward to that.
Sure.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, stay safe.